Welcome to the Eddie Tenti podcast number 1077. I hope this little podcast provides you some peace and joy in your day right now. How you doing? I hope you're doing okay. What are you doing? Are you making stuff? If you are, you can send whatever that thing is to events@idtenti.com. And hopefully we could share it with the ID10T community on the ID10T community corkboard, which this is. Events@ID10T.com. Like Mauro, who writes, I have written and illustrated my very first self-published children's book on Amazon titled Our New Different World, a story and picture book for children to understand our roles during a pandemic, which if you just search on Amazon, it comes up. I've not read the book yet. I just saw the email, but I'm on the page now on Amazon. And he says, this book is to help bring some positivity and fun for our little readers, to show the bright side of what kids can do to help in a creative way. It's up to us to show the love and compassion to our children during these times, to bring some joy to our new, different world. The day I started to write, draw this book was the day I asked my 8-year-old daughter how she felt about our current pandemic. It was at that point she started to cry, telling me how worried she was about the fate of her grandparents in the future. My hope is that this book can brighten up our children's world and not give them the view of what we see as adults. So that's a beautiful sentiment. And that is up on Amazon right now. Thank you so much for sharing, Mauro. Events@id10t.com. This episode is Louis Anderson, comedian Louis Anderson, who is, I mean, just superb as Christine Baskets on Baskets. Are you watching Baskets? You should. And he's just had such an amazing career. Now, I watched Louis all through the 80s. Doing comedy. I was such a big Louis Anderson fan. And in the 90s, we became friends, and that blew me away. Like, oh my God, this guy that I used to watch his comedy and I was such a fan of, now we're friends. Totally blew me away. And we've been friends now for like 25 years. And he and my mom are friends. And by the way, we all were on the podcast together a few years ago. He came on to promote the book that he had written for his, it was in honor of his mom. It was called Hey Mom. And so I thought, oh, I should have my mom on. And I think it might've gone up for Mother's Day a few years ago. So that was a really, really sweet special episode, but he's just the sweetest guy. I love him so much and so funny, and put me on stage doing stand-up. He was like the first person to say, hey, do you want to come do stand-up at my show? And I bombed horribly. It was in like 1996, I think, and then didn't do stand-up again for maybe two years. So, he gave me some of the best advice that I've ever heard, which is get on stage 100 times, then see how you feel. And it's like you just got to learn by doing, and then you get more perspective once you do it a bunch. So thank you to Louis Anderson for always being such an amazing person in my life and an amazing comedian. By the way, his new stand-up special, Big Underwear is the name of it, is airing June 23rd, the day this is going up, on the CW at 9 p.m. So please check that out. Support him, and go see him live whenever that is a thing we're able to do again. It's not now, but it will be at some point, hopefully soon. So thanks again to Louis, and thank you for listening. I appreciate you. This is the ID10T podcast number 1077 that begins now.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Go, baby.
Can you see me?
Yeah. Can you see me?
No, I just see your name on the thing. You'd have to.
Oh, you don't see me? Oh,
no. Fuck.
Let me get that straightened out here because I'm fucking cute today.
It's so good to see you.
Let me get rid of the glass. I don't need the glasses, do I?
No, only if you want them.
I mean, how do they look? Do I look better with the glasses or without them?
They both look good, by the way. They're just totally different looks. If you were doing the four-panel headshot that everyone did in the 80s,
yeah,
you'd have the studious look with the glasses and then the ready-to-go-out look without the glasses.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good. Is this the right of? I'm so proud of myself because I'm terrible with computers.
Yeah.
But I downloaded everything, and I just feel so. I feel like I'm a new person.
You are. It is a bold new age that you are a part of.
Oh my God! You know, I lived through all those riots in the 60s and 70s. You know, but all the Vietnam stuff. I saw Nixon get out. I saw Jimmy come in. I really have. I was thinking the other day. I've really lived through a lot of stuff. I did the shows for two presidents. You know, stuff that was like, you know, like the when they opened the Ford Theater, I was there for that with a bunch of other entertainers. To a big gala was televised.
Did you perform there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and, wow.
And Lance Burton and I have been friends ever since, and he was a magician. I go, they let you bring this sword in. That surprises me. That's what I really like. That's the project kid in me.
It's like, Reagan, I'm a magician.
Reagan and Tip O'Neill are out there, and Nancy, and I couldn't bring. They were searching me like I had a gun under one of my fat flaps. And,
Are you now? Just one of the things
are we recording, by the way?
Yeah, we just started recording. Right. So, I mean, we started recording before. I can start it now, or I can start it when you came on.
We're great.
I love kind of talking to other comedians about the idea of we're not performing. A lot of us aren't performing right now, and don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think my dates all got pushed to 2021.
Me too.
I know there are some people who are starting to squeak back into clubs with social distancing measures and stuff. I just sort of feel like, I'm going to wait this out. I think it's probably better to wait it out. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be responsible for bringing a bunch of people together until we kind of know more about what's going on. But are you itching to perform, or do you feel okay?
I'm itching, but not to perform. you know, like
that's where you just I just walked through the gate here. I left this gate open for you.
Thank you. Well, it's been so long since, you know, I've talked to human beings. No, but yeah, no, I'm not. I have a corporate supposedly in July here in Vegas.
Yeah,
and I have already thought, what am I doing that?
Right.
And I guess I am. I guess I, no, I mean, they confirmed it recently. So
I still feel like it's a day to day thing though. You know?
It is. Listen, everything's changed and all my dates are pushed to 2021. And I think I just keep trying to figure out the configuration at places and I just don't see it working. I don't see, like, if you have half the club full, they're still not, they're going to have enough people to wait on it. They're not going to make any money. So I don't know. I mean, I'm looking just at economics for people. Yeah. But I have heard a few people sold out all their shows, which does that mean they sold half the tickets of the club? Or
right.
Here's the greatest thing that people are doing that I really loved. It threw me all the way back to my childhood. They're doing drive-in theaters on a flatbed truck. The comics on a flatbed truck.
Yes, I've heard about this.
In their car.
Yeah.
You know? And no, my dad still won't let me get stuff at the... We brought candy. You're not buying that candy.
but I wonder, like, because so much, I mean... That's a great solution for the audience, but I wonder for the comedian without having the audience feedback, because for me, it's such a relationship with the audience. So like, how do you know what's working? How can you kind of ride the wave of the energy of the room if you can't hear anyone because they're in their cars?
I think you can do it with material. But I think if you're talking about you want to take someone somewhere,
yeah,
I think you have to do that thing that all of us are capable of. you have to perform for yourself like you used to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd be on stage and these people are not getting this, but I am going to have the best time of my life. Hey, folks, here's another one you won't get. Anyway, lady, thanks for coming, lady.
Don't worry, later I'll sit in my car alone and cry and question my life choices, but now we're going to get through this set.
And I think that made me, you know, I was the first comic on at the store after Harris Pete. So Harris Pete was the MC and the doorman. So the show would start at 8 o'clock. At 8:15, I would go on for 2 to 4 people, because that's the spot I got. Because I feel like Mitzi was forced into, Jimmy Walker had kind of forced Mitzi into making me a paid regular.
Amazing.
And which I love Jimmy for that, because she would always just kind of walk out when I was on, and so it would break my heart. But then finally, we became, you know, like best friends, Mitzi and I. So it all worked out. But, you know, Mitzi, you know, she either liked you or she didn't. And I always felt like, oh, she's just being nice. But I was 2 to 4 people. So for months, for maybe a year, I would go on at 8:15.
Wow.
Unless I had a showcase, then I would go on at 9:30. That's the prime spot in the original room, 9:30.
But that's such a great tale of, you know, like half of that story is perseverance and half of that story is you loved doing stand-up so much that you kept doing it even in the face of like, God, it's been a year. I'm still doing the same spot. I don't think the club owner is into me. And so how did you turn that? How did you spin that?
I made sure that Betty and John from Peoria were in my, you know, in my zeitgeist. We were all like, here we are.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I don't know if I use zeitgeist right, but I always want to use it. Such a wonderful sounding word. Such a good comedy word. My zeitgeist! Get them in here. Where's that zeitgeist? I need them. Anyway, so I made sure that those people, because, you know, I started out in Minneapolis, and my thing's about the, like yours is, this is a relationship I'm having with the audience. Mm-hmm. So if there's 4 people, let's make them say at the end of the night, I still think Louis was the best.
Yeah.
I still think Louis, for what he had, Louis made me feel so comfortable or made me really laugh the hardest. I mean, that's what we're all going for. We're all going for people mumbling our jokes to their friends and loved ones on the way out, or laying in bed going, what about that one thing you said?
Well, and especially when you're first starting out in comedy, your ego can protect you sometimes. You go, oh, the audience was terrible, or they didn't get me, or they didn't, you know, as opposed to like, well, how can I connect with them? How can I connect with 4 people? I still remember your jokes from the Dangerfield special. Hey, Lou, you see that swamp over there? That's where your real parents live. I still remember those jokes, you know? Yeah. And for someone, I'm not that kind of a joke writer, so I'm fascinated by those really sticky jokes that just embed in people's brains that are elegant and simple, but so full of, you know, just those ones where you just, you can't, oh, I saw this guy the other night and he did this great joke and you have to see it, but it was this, you know, that kind of quotable comedy is so, it just sort of feels like an albatross.
Do you think I could challenge you to do a 7-minute, 5 to 7 Carson set or Leno set or, you know, whoever set you want to pick of your favorite late night people? Do you think I could challenge you to do a 5 to 7 minute set that we could work together?
I mean, that's
a... You could, and then you would say to me, I want you to do what I do. I want you to stream it. I want you to go up there with a one-word thing and take it where you're going for 5 to 7 minutes.
So we kind of swap styles?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know how what you do is difficult in my mind is what you think I do. So
that would be a dream.
I got that out, didn't I?
Yes, that would be such an honor to work on stuff with you, because what I notice is when I, you know, I have the luxury when I perform that, you know, I'm doing headlining sets and people generally know that they're coming to see me. And so that thing where you just kind of go up in a random club and have to like win the crowd over right away in that 10 right. minutes, like in the first minute to let them know, like, it's okay to like me. Here's the stuff, you know, and then they're on board. I'm fortunate enough now that I don't necessarily have to do that because people kind of know what they're coming to see. But I write such long story bits that are so involved and bleed into one another that it is very difficult for me to cut out like a 10 minute, 12 minute, 15 minute chunk and just go do it at the Comedy Store. Cause I'm like, fuck, in order for this bit to work, you kind of have to understand who I am and you kind of have to know the stuff that came before it. So yes, this would be such a beautiful challenge to do what you're saying. And also, I'm ashamed as a comedian because I should be able to just do that. And that actually is a little bit of work.
That's not true though, because you do what is best for you as a comedian. And so once you follow that path that you took, because you chose all this, so you can't, like, you chose to be like this. This is closest to who you are. And what I do is closest to who I am.
Right.
You know, so we're just, you know, I like jokes. I can write jokes. But on the same token, you know what happened to me today on the drive over here? Oh my God. It was frightening. And then I have to make that particular thing last 5 to 7 minutes.
Build it with jokes, but you have to build it with jokes. And
no, but I can't. I mean, what do you mean build it with jokes? I'm talking about your thing. You have an idea of where you're going. Now, what it sounds like when you're on stage, and you may not know this, is that you are extemporaneous. Yes, but you work really hard at that extemporaneous act. That spontaneity is endemic. Did I get that right? Because that's a good
I think word. You did. I think the zeitgeist of the conversation allows for the endemic. Yeah.
For who you are, though.
Yes,
like
I do.
Your flavor. That's your Flavor Flav.
I like it to feel conversational, and I was always inspired by. I mean, it's kind of funny because the comedians that I grew up watching and loving, like Steve Martin and and Emo and Judy Tenuta.
Emo. Can we talk about what a joke writer Emo is?
I mean, he's a flawless joke.
He hates being called a joke writer, by the way, the greatest joke writer. He likes being known as a great comic, which he is. But when you're a comedian and you hear his jokes, you go, no matter what I did, no matter how many Lego sets I bought, I could not have constructed that
in any way.
No.
And it's like he manages to, he's this perfect nexus of so smart, but so accessible and silly. And he's bringing in these crazy high concepts and distilling them, making them simple within this crazy joke structure with one or two turns.
Amazing.
That you never see coming. And it's really like watching him is like watching a master magician, you know, like do this weird sleight of hand.
So same token, Steve Allen, because that's who you said, right? Or was it Steve Martin?
Steve Martin,
completely different than Emo, but arriving at a similar place.
Yeah.
You know, that silliness and that kind of stuff. You know, and now the dime trick, right? And he's in a big arena. And the absurdity of that is, the humor behind that for me is, what about the guy who goes, what was the trick with the dime?
Yeah.
He joined there. He was dragged to the show.
But I think sort of the person who's comedy model who was also one of the most influential comedians to me. And when I was, I think the first comedian my parents exposed me to was Steve Martin because of SNL. Right. And then very quickly, a Richard Pryor album was given to me. And wow. I think Carlin.
Pryor, you know, was a big influence on me. People would be surprised to know that, but.
Well, I think he's sort of the, when you look at where comedy evolved, I think he's the source, like that sort of conversational comedy that's very personal about his life, that's very honest, is so much of what comedy is now. And I believe that that's owed to Pryor.
Absolutely.
And
owed lock, stock, and some people talk about Lenny Bruce. It's, you know, that, yes, he opened that. You know, Lenny Bruce opened a big wound, in my opinion, and let it all spill out. But Pryor surgically opened his whole, the front of him when he was performing. It was is that his esophagus hanging on?
And what I mean? He made it funny, and he made these really, sometimes intense things incredibly funny about his personal life and just things he was going through. And it's like, I think that is so much. And then the '80s happened. And then it seemed like everyone kind of evolved the style of comedy that was just to get their 5 to 7 minutes on television. Mm-hmm. And
what are you trying to say?
But it worked because
hit me in the back of the head with a club.
I mean, it was different in the 80s just a little bit, just because of the way that the media affected how stand-up was portrayed.
Exactly. So this is a really nice little nugget of manure to sift through to grow something in. But the real truth is, this is really true. Comedy became mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
That was what the 80s were to me. Like comedy, there was comedy shows on TV. There was comedy shows, specials on HBO. There were all those things that hadn't ever happened before.
Mm-hmm.
The 80s, for some reason, was a great, great place for all that to happen.
Explosion of cable.
Yes, it was. It was. It was, you could hear somebody say fuck on TV, mm-hmm. Or not, regardless, but you could hear everything that the people wanted to say. So the point of view became alive and well and refreshing to people. Now, I don't know if HBO did that single-handedly, certainly a big part of it, Showtime and cable, you know, when you saw the shows. But I think that those people, I always wonder, were we the result of the people like Robert Klein and George Carlin and Joan Rivers and Toadie Fields and Godfrey Cambridge, were we the sifter of that, or were we the sifter of Bob Hope and Rodney Dangerfield and all those guys? Were we, and Johnny Carson, were the 80s, were we the, you know how you sift flour and a finer flour comes out?
Yeah.
Were we that? In fact, we used to use the sifter for the finer powder. Anyway, I'm just kidding.
I don't know, actually. It's a really interesting question to try to figure out, because, you know, the Robert Kleins and the Carlins and the Jones, they were obviously amazing, but they also talked about other things. Joan, I think, talked about the outside world, but as her, like it was about, she was able to make the outside world kind of about her, that point of view that she had.
Yeah, She created a character.
Yes.
Don't you think? Rodney created a character. Robert Klein seemed like a Brooklyn or wherever he was born, in Bronx or whatever, neighborhood kid who was schooling us on stuff. And then, you know, he seemed like a jazz musician to me, Robert Klein. Right. He always seemed like a jazz musician to me. And I don't mean that in any negative way. But
But that's the difference between that's the difference between, like, you know, when you do a style of comedy that's a little more, that feels a little more extemporaneous or a little more, I guess, like, you know, jazz in that way, it's, you know, I feel like the risk that you can run is that some of the stuff might not stick with people. Like, they might enjoy the show and go, wow, we went on this really crazy ride, you know, but it doesn't, but some of it may not, you know, be like, stay with people, like certain bits. That stuff's a little harder to quote to your friends, you know, because it's sort of like, you know,
you had to be there.
You had to be there. Yeah. It was part of the experience. Yeah. I'm not saying one is necessarily better than the other. It's just different. You know, it's just different.
But that's why I said to you, that's why I challenged you. Not a real challenge. Like, you don't have to do it. It's a lot of work. And who really
no,
wants
but it's
to
a
do
good,
any of that?
I would love to do something.
Kind of a good exercise. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a good exercise that in a month, you and I come back onto this thing, this podcast, and say, I say to you, here's my 1 minute of your kind of stuff.
Yeah, and then I do the same. Say, but I feel like I have to do mine. If I'm really being influenced by your style, then the other challenge is that I have to do mine clean.
No, I mean, I don't think you do. I mean, I don't think you do have to do it clean. My stuff could be dirty. I could tell you how it could all be dirty. But I only did it because it's likely that people brought their moms and dads to my show. So I knew moms and dads, especially moms and grandmas and all those people that come, that became fans of mine from television. I couldn't, if I did that, I'd lose, they would never come again.
But you also don't need to, because you write such great, clean jokes. It's you.
But I just didn't, I didn't just write clean jokes. I just wrote jokes
that are clean.
I didn't think of that, but I didn't think that way.
Yeah, I know, because your brain doesn't.
I get what you mean.
I can't tell you how many.
Here's a joke I wrote that I really can't tell with my crowd.
Okay.
All right. And it's clean. Okay. I just read where a guy killed his whole family. That's unbelievable. You know, my friend told me, he goes, I can't believe somebody killed their whole family. And I said, I can't believe it doesn't happen more often. But wait, let me just finish it, though. It's not finished. I don't think you start out where you're going to kill everyone, but the rush of the first one must carry you right through. Now, that is not really my type of joke, but it is a true thought I had because of so many family things. You know how families, you know, they can drive you crazy. So,
well, But first of all, before I get to my mom, I think you could get away with that because
I think
a lot of other people, if they told that joke, it would sound aggressive and threatening. But in the body of your set, in the context of your set, if you put it in the middle of the set, I think people would totally accept it because you have such a friendly, inviting, inclusive persona that I don't think anyone would, you know, like sometimes you run that risk with jokes where sometimes people in the audience will take things that you say literally and they might go, why would you think he should kill his, you know? But within the context of your set, I really think you could. I think you could get away with a joke like
all
that.
Right. I'm gonna find another joke that's like that.
I just can't tell you how many jokes that I write that start with pooping, and then I write them down, and then I go, well, I probably won't use this, but my brain obviously wants to write about poop, so I'm just gonna write about poop, and then maybe it'll go somewhere in the set.
Did you get potty trained early? Is that it?
I probably did. You know, speaking of moms, that's a great question to ask my mom. Mom, when did you potty train me? Why do I write so many poop jokes?
Yeah.
Because my mom's good. She's, you know, obviously we've all been
through
it's just
it.
with the quarantine, I have not hugged my mom in like 3.5 months. And it's I don't believe I have coronavirus. I don't believe my mom has coronavirus. I'm just terrified, like, you know, hypochondriac style. What if I got it somehow, even though I haven't been in another building other than my home? And then I hug my mom and then she gets it. I don't want to get her sick. Yeah. So I'm just, you know, but we're actually going
here's
to dinner.
Here's what I was thinking. Oh, good. Yeah. Here's what I was thinking. Now, this probably sounds crazy, but I said, when people come over, I would take a sheet, you know, at least a 700 thread count.
Mm-hmm.
And I would put that sheet up and we would hug each other through the sheet.
So you would have a hugging sheet.
I would have a hugging sheet that would have to be washed after every hug.
That perfectly fits the zeitgeist of this coronavirus.
And that is exactly who I am, a problem solver.
You would have to make sure that you... The funny part would be if you didn't wash it after every time and people came over and they could just see your face print. Like, oh, that's where he hugged the last person.
That's where your mind goes. I knew that. That's your jokes right there. That's it. I love that. See, that's where you go, this is the bad kid in me.
Well, yeah, because I feel like you'd come over and you'd just see everyone that you hugged. Oh, there's Aunt Martha's face. Yeah. There's this that's person's good. Face.
And that's a great joke. That's a great joke, though. But that is a great joke. So here's how I would tell that joke. That's what I do. But, you know, I hugged everyone even though I wasn't supposed to. That's how I'd start that out, very Bob Hope. You know, I hugged everybody even though I wasn't supposed to. What I did is I got a sheet, and the part for me that's funny in the sheet is a 1,200 count thread, a 1,200 thread count at least. And then I hugged the person through the sheet, and then I'd washed it every time afterwards. Except the one time when somebody I didn't care much about, I didn't bother washing it. Now that, I don't know if there's a joke there, but it needs another punch. But
So I hear a thing like that, and then I start thinking about, well, there's all these different side roads you can take. This is where I get lost all the time. There's all these different side roads you can take. So
yeah.
One of the data points of that was the thread count. So you could go into a side point about the thread count. Then even getting the sheet, you could go into a side road about Amazon and ordering sheets or going to Bed Bath & Beyond and not being able to figure out, and then coming home with 1,000 refrigerator magnets and forgetting to buy the 2,000 count thread sheet. So then you're having to hug people covered in refrigerator. You know, like it. I get ADHD with it that it's hard for me to stay on one track.
Well, I think that, you know, if you decide to take the I Can Do It challenge and you want to – is your hair – are you getting more hair?
Well, I my hair's just grown. I got my first haircut.
Good. It looks good, though.
I got my first haircut in 4 months a couple of days ago.
Oh, did you?
And it – yeah, my – the same person, Sean, who's been cutting my hair since 1997 – that cuts my hair for all the shows that I work on. I love him. He was like, I'll come to your house on a Saturday. So he came over, he had a face shield on, I had a mask on, and he cut my hair. And
he did a good job. It looks good.
He's the best. He is the best. Yeah. I love Sean.
Well, I was supposed to go to the salon 7 o'clock on Friday. And I just said, nah. I go, I just can't.
Not ready.
I'm into this 60s, 80s, 70s thing I got going.
It's coming back, man.
It's coming. I mean, I just want to be in one of, what's his name's movies that did the Once Upon a Time.
Oh, yeah. An old-timey Tarantino movie.
Yeah, timey Tarantino. There's a great Timey Tarantino. To me, that words are the most fun thing for me. Anyways, I'm glad your mom. Will you give her my best? I know.
Oh, she loves you so much. She
lost her doggie, so I know.
She did. Yeah, she lost Benji in January, and it was. Yeah. She still. It that was that has been the really difficult thing with the quarantine is she didn't have her little companion with her during the quarantine, but he was very sick near the end of his life. And so I do think,
look what I used to drink out of. That's so fun.
Oh, the midnight thing. Yeah, oh, yeah. So I love it.
I've been using it since I did the show.
Oh, that's fantastic. I can tell that it's been, it looks like it's been washed a bunch. It's been used. I love it.
It just makes me happy. I love doing that show because it was just a sweetest thing to for you to have me on that show.
Oh, anyway, and you were great on it. You were great.
I was minimal, but it's okay. You can never lie to a comic. You know that, right?
No,
I was
but
great. I was great in the way I could be great on that show. But that show was very clever and very, very smart. And congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you. It was a fun show, and we were just, you know, it was just the perfect storm of. We had an amazing staff, an amazing group of writers, an amazing collection of comics that would come on. Like everything about it was such an amazing group effort. And when you work in this business a long time and you realize what a real gift it is to have such a great group of people all kind of focused at the same thing. It was just a wonderful experience.
Where do you think we lost the audience? Do you think when we got into
the deep dive of comedy evolution,
do you think they just went, what are they?
But you know what? In as much as you said, standing on stage, this one's for me, then that's fine. This is for me because, I mean, you have to know, and I know that we've been friends for almost 25 years, but you know, you have to know what a genuine joy. I mean, you were one of my comedy inspirations growing up. So to the fact that A, that we're friends now, B, that you're the sweet, wonderful human being that you are, and C, that you want to write some comedy stuff with me. I mean, you just have to know that
it's just such a fun idea.
The 12-year-old comedy kid in me is like beside himself that we are even having this conversation about these things. So I appreciate it so greatly. So if people are like, "Yeah, boring. I don't care that much about how comedy works." Then that's okay. You know, like not everything has to be for everybody.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know, because that's what I was looking forward to. Like a lot of people have an agenda when you do the podcast, and I go, "Well, Chris won't. This is a conversation." Between two people and know each other.
Yeah, it's also an opportunity to catch up with you and see how you are and how's Vegas doing? Good.
Vegas is, I guess, opening every other slot. This is where I found interesting. Every other slot is turned off. Every other slot machine is turned off. And I go, that's maybe 3 feet.
Yeah.
That's not 6.5, you know, because that Minnesota part of me that goes, that's not 6 feet. I don't care what anyone says.
That's not,
you know, my dad. That's my dad. That's a foot short, if it's anything.
But anyway, what about like blackjack tables, like touching all the coins, touching all the chips, like you can see people apart.
And money alone, money.
Yeah.
What are they doing with the money and the chips? I think there's, you know, I have no idea. Because I don't go out because I'm too vulnerable, you know. Yeah. I'm not going to live all these years to get have a virus kill me when I know it's out there.
Right.
I think I saw it the other day, and I almost went out, and I went, "I'm going back in."
That was it.
For a while I freaked out, you know, after I'd do something like I'd go to the store, and I go, "I can't go to the store anymore. I got to have someone else go to the store. I got to wipe down all this stuff and." I got to live like that because I have to take this serious because a lot of people are able to compartmentalize this and not take it serious. And I feel like we're going to suffer from that recently now that everybody had to get out, which I get that. I know that people had to get out. You know, I am not one of those people who goes, "We got to get out of here." I go, I don't have to get out of here. I have this TV. I like watching television. I finished Homeland. I was finally watched that show. But you know what I really been trying to do is, God, did I get in touch with a tremendous amount of stuff of what is it that I want now out of life? I just like, I went through a checklist, not a bucket list, a checklist. What's important? What really matters? What should I be doing? And I'm happy to say for the most part, I've been doing stuff that I really wanted to do. So I'm so fortunate and so lucky to have done that stuff. And I'm just excited about what I can do again. I've been trying to write a book and it's not coming out. So it must be, I must not have the thing to say at the time. But this thing has changed me. Like, this thing has changed me. I grew up in the project, so I know about, you know, growing up with, you know, being kind of profiled, all the kids in the projects. We lined up in different lines. We were not, we were like the project line. They would go, project line over here. And I go, what do you have to say that? You know, it just felt so weird. But also, I grew up with a mother who was like, she never judged anybody. And my dad, he was a jazz musician, so he played jazz. You know, he was with people of color. And so I'm lucky because I agonized over all this stuff going on. And I said, do I have to worry about it? And I go, no, but I have to listen and I have to get right on it. And I have to make sure that I'm not part of the problem. And I hope that I'm not. And I hope I can do some things that will help make people feel better.
Well, that's really wonderful to hear. And also not surprising to me as someone that, as again, in the last 25 years, I feel like your guiding principle above everything else as a comedian and a host, as an actor, I feel like the most important thing for you is, do the people that you see feel supported and happy, and can you help, can you make people feel comfortable, can you? And that to me is kind of your guiding thing. And underneath that, all the other stuff, you know, comedian,
that's
actor,
true, though, that's true. Like, I want people to have a better life, and my interaction with people, I want them to leave feeling, I guess, refreshed and confident and believing in themselves, because I think that that's the gig. Listen, you've got to believe in yourself. You've got to do and be fearless and do the stuff you really want to do, because it's all that matters. Those are the things that really matter out there.
And now we pause to thank this sponsor for this portion of the ID10T podcast, Honey. Now, we all shop online, all right? I mean, pretty much that's all we can do now at the moment. And you see there's a promo code field that taunts you at checkout. But thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. Honey is a free browser extension that finds promo codes for you and then automatically applies them to your cart. So imagine you're shopping on one of your favorite sites. You get to checkout. The Honey button drops down. All you have to do is click Apply Coupons. And within a few seconds, Honey will scan its database of all the working coupons for that site, and then you just watch the prices drop. In fact, when Honey came up to sponsor the podcast, our producer Katie was like, oh my god, I use that all the time. I've saved so much money on clothes. So Honey has over 17 million members, $2 billion in savings, and supports over 30,000 stores online. And these are like big brand stores that you probably use, like, you know, DoorDash, Newegg, Walmart. So if you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on free money. It is literally free and installs in a few seconds. And by getting it, you know, you're not only doing yourself a favor, but you're also supporting the podcast. So get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/ID10T. That's joinhoney.com/ID10T. We thank Honey for sponsoring this portion of the ID10T podcast, which we now resume already in progress.
I was just going to say, it's just so easy in our business to get caught up in your own me, and forget, you know, because it is, especially when you're a comedian, you are constantly like, when am I performing? Where are my sets going to be? I have to kind of market all this stuff. My set, like, you really kind of are the machine, and you're talking about, a lot of times, you know, you're talking about yourself on stage. So it can be very easy to get caught up in me. But the idea of even just shifting that perspective and saying like, well, how can I make this experience better for other people? How can I be a better person? How can I make sure that I'm making good choices? And like you said, that I am not part of the problem. And then underneath that, then all the other stuff, you start from that place. I just feel like it just kind of makes all the other stuff better rather than doing it all for yourself from the get-go, you know?
Right.
I feel like that is part of the goal.
You know, you're exactly right. Like, if it were always me, 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 I don't think I would still be doing what I'm doing. I think that everything that I did, even the Family Feud, which people might think, well, I still was rooting like crazy for those people to win that money, because I knew not just winning the money, but, you know, feeling better about participating in something. And it's kind of dream come true stuff. So people are either born as game show junkies like I am, or you're not. You either love game shows or you don't care about it. Your show, Love the Wall. I was crazy. I agonized. You would agonize over, don't do it, do it, do it, don't do it, do it. And yeah. I just love that. And I think maybe that's why we connect so well, is because our outcomes for people, we want them to be good. We don't have an agenda there. We want them to be happy.
I agree with you.
I'm watching Baskets now on Hulu because I never really watched it when I made it.
Really?
I watched the episode. It's
such a good show.
Yeah, I watched the episode the night it aired, usually, if I could, and I'd tweet about it and say, hey, that was fun. But I never realized how, I mean, the show, I'm very proud of the show. I'm just so happy that I got to play that beautiful character. It just is a homage to my mom, and just the fact that when I became that character, I was able to really not let Louis Anderson interfere with it. And that was a really big thing for me.
I know, but so much of your heart is Christine's heart that, you know, like,
yes, but
she just loves, you know, she just is such she's so sympathetic to everyone and just loves the small details of life so much. She just wants to share and make everyone happy.
I just talked with Jonathan Kreisel and Martha and Alex Morris, all people. I'm doing this thing called Baskets of Fun with Louis, and I'm interviewing them all about their experience on Baskets. Oh, and I'm gonna put that out coming up, because I talked with Jonathan, the director, Jonathan Kreisel, an hour and a half. We could have went three probably, but he had so many details I had no idea about, which I really loved. You know, how they were thinking about how they created the character, all that kind of stuff, which was really good for me. Anyway, I just got off on that because I want people to know that.
Well, they should. I mean, we love. Are there more Baskets being made? Do you know what's going on?
Well, that was it. I think everybody wants to do more Baskets, but we also ended it beautifully, and you know, we knew it was probably coming to an end. You know, Chris, it's not a show for everyone, but I always say it's a show for everyone who needs it. And I think that really so many people have needed that show to kind of like, oh, I need that. I need Christine's love for a mother's love. I've had many people write me and say, would you be my mother? And I said, you know, well, I certainly would. I wouldn't hesitate to be your mom, but you're going to have to clean up your act a little. Because that's who Christine is. Christine always threw a little jab in.
It was always a well-meaning jab, because it seemed like she knew, I know that there's a problem in this situation, and I know how you should fix this, and I'm just going to throw this out there, and
you know, go and get that, and don't dawdle. For God's sakes, you're always dawdling. She would she had these little, I don't know, spitballs that she was able to like launch at people. You know, don't dawdle. You're always dawdling.
I had asked you if this was, you know, right before everything happened, so the timing wasn't ideal, but I had been talking with Flanagan at Largo, like, oh, I might want to do like a monthly sort of a music show or a live podcast or whatever. And I said, oh, I would love to have you come be Christine. and do a song.
I probably would do it for you.
But now, like, I don't know when that's going to be a thing people can.
So two things that I've been working on, but just all personally, I don't have anyone helping me with it, is an album by Christine Baskets.
Oh, I love that.
On the A side, and songs by Louis Anderson on the B side. And I just thought it would be so much fun. The other thing is, if you're voting out there, vote for me to, I'm up for the Emmy this year because we missed the cut last year. So,
you missed the cut last year? I didn't know that.
By 9 days, we missed the cut.
That is fantastic. I mean, it is one of the great comedy performances because it's there's so much heart to that show that if that show had originally been pitched to me, that show was something so much other than what I assumed that it would be, that you just have to watch, like, what a beautiful family story it is. But how it's like, as I said to you last time you were on the podcast, if you pitch a show, it's like, well, Zach is this one sort of hapless character who wants to be a French clown, and he plays his twin brother who's just this, like, self-absorbed narcissistic asshole, and he has this weird accent that they never explain. And, you know, on paper, you're like, oh, yeah, I could see how that'd be funny. But then you watch a show and you go, oh, my God, this is like a beautiful family story at the core of this, this family unit who's just doing the best they can to kind of get through life and support each other despite all of their idiosyncrasies, which bump into each other constantly. It's such a beautiful story.
Well, Jonathan, you know, when I first met him, he goes, don't think of this as a half-hour show. Think of this as a 3.5-hour movie, and don't think of it as like a sitcom. Think of it as a slapstick drama. And I thought those were two beautiful things he said. And it really was like a slapstick. You know, there were just some of the shots in that show are so cinematic. So it was fun working with them. We're talking about doing another show together of some sort. And, you know, like, I'm the luckiest guy in the world because I still can get work and I still can do things. And
you've gotten to do some.
I think
really...
I was on with you when the book came out. Was that right?
Yeah, you were. Yeah,
and it just came out on paperbacks. So it was that a year ago then? Was that only a year ago?
Oh no, that was like two years ago. That was like 2.5 years ago.
2.5 years.
And my mom came on. This was
She was so much fun. I got so many comments about that.
Oh, she loves you. This was for your book, Hey Mom, right?
The stories I told my mom, but you can read them too, which I really never settled on that. I was kind of sold that idea. I go, well, it does almost sounds right. But you know, when you're doing something, you just go, Louis, this doesn't matter. Just get going on it.
I just hope that when you look at your career as a whole, and it sounds like you do, that you really see like what a perfect, like, I don't know what more perfect a career. It's like, you've gotten to do stand-up. You got to do stand-up during the comedy boom. You know, you've had regular shows in Vegas. You've gotten to be a game show host. You've gotten to be an incredible actor and play this wonderful character. You've gotten to be open about your relationship with your mom and make other people feel more connected. And, you know, you're vulnerable. Like, you've really done so many wonderful things that it's just like, does it feel all like gravy to you at this point? Like anything else that you get to do is just like, oh, it's all gravy now. I've gotten to do so many amazing things.
God, it's such a good question. And it's so, the ego part of me goes, well, I haven't done the ultimate movie I want to do. I want to play Fatty Arbuckle, maybe with Zach as Harold Lloyd or one of those characters.
Oh my God.
He's such a great comedic genius. Or you, I would love for you to be in it.
I would. Zach's pretty good.
No, but I'm just saying, Zach's such a great slapstick guy, but you're a great actor. So what I'm saying is I really wanted to do that for two reasons. When I was just starting out as a comedian, I met this psychic, and his mother was a psychic too, and she wanted to do a reading. And I said, oh, well, Sure, I'll take a reading. I'd like to get a. Who doesn't want to get read? She said to me, "You were a famous silent film star in the early 1900s, and you have come back to right the wrong that was done to you." And I go, "What are you talking about?" And so I looked up silent film stars, and I found Fatty Arbuckle, who I look amazingly, I look so much like him. You'd be very surprised. And I was born on the same day.
Holy shit.
So I said, oh my God. So I've always wanted to do that movie because, you know, he was acquitted. And, you know, it was just the Hearst. I shouldn't even say that. Sorry, I said
was
that
it now. Was it my wife's family?
I think it was Lydia's family, but
the great grandfather
because of some actress that he was involved with. There's something, or they just blamed him, or whatever it was. All the newspapers dragged him, and you can take this out if you want.
No, listen, hey,
I know,
no,
but I don't. Fine. I mean, I'm not. I'm just reporting on what I read.
Yeah, no, yeah, and, I'm not. We're not
but
not
what I'm saying is. The thing that touched me so much, he died really with a broken heart. Right before he died, he signed a RKO out of New Jersey. They had a studio, and he signed a thing to come back to movies. And then he died like the next week. But after he was acquitted, and really he never got another job, he toured live to sold out shows so he could pay all of his legal bills and stuff.
Was he doing stand-up? What was he doing live?
I would imagine that, you know, he was such a clever human being. You know, he invented the floor where you could fall on it and not get hurt. And mm-hmm. He was the first guy to have his name above the title. He was the first guy to get $1 million for a movie.
Oh, my God. That must have been like $50 million back then.
Yeah. I mean, he really did. But he... I don't know what he did, but I would imagine he did that kind of thing. Sketches from the movies, I would guess. Don't you think?
Probably, you think? But also like the idea
stuff, you know,
the idea of seeing someone live, you know, like the new medium of film.
Yes.
Seeing someone in person, having seen them on a big screen back then.
And haven't seen them in the newspaper every single day for a year.
Must have blown their minds.
Yeah, so I just always felt as like, oh, I would love to give my perspective on how he must have felt, just because I'm a performer. So I would have that wait, no, that didn't happen. You know, or whatever it was. And those relationships, and that everybody really had very few friends after that. But that he never gave up on his life, and he never gave up on trying to get back into show business. So that's one of the movies I'd like to do.
You know, it's so funny because sometimes, like, if we're talking to someone and Citizen Kane comes up, they'll go, "Oh my God, I'm sorry. I know that was."
Linda's
like, "I don't care. I didn't, you know, it was like it was well, almost 100. You know, it's fine. You know, like
yeah." Liddy, I'm sure thinks that's so silly. You know, because we are silly people.
We have a Citizen Kane poster in our house. We have an Italian original Citizen Kane poster in our house. Like, it's not
one of my favorite verboten
topic.
What if one of my favorite movies? And anyway, so that, and so what you're saying is it's all gravy, but I'm not supposed to be eating gravy. So that's, I couldn't let that boat sail.
My favorite part of that people listening will not get to see is how sincere your face was when you said, "But I'm not eating." Like, it was so. It's one of the things, like, seeing your face. It's a funny joke to hear, but it's a funny joke to see because your performance of it was so I just wasn't prepared that that's where you were going, and then. It just made
that's
the joke.
That's what it's about, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the sleight of hand.
It's the sleight of hand.
Don't you go down that hole or that tributary when you're performing all the time, don't you? And
yes,
then your goal is, hopefully I find another tributary to get tributary
to get back.
Tributary,
yeah.
To get Terry.
Terry. Terry Tarantino over there? Is Timmy Tarantino with you, Terry?
Timmy Tarantino was a fabulous name. I love his films, and they're
he was great. He produced a lot of the original Arbuckle films, Timmy Tarantino.
Yeah, that was great.
But that thing right there of like just sort of trying to slide a joke in that drive that we all have. I think that's the kind of thing that when people are young, some people just naturally do that and they don't realize it's a thing. And a lot of times, because most people, I think a lot of people don't normally do that. And so I just remember growing up, you would do that in conversation and then people would look at you weird and be like, what? Oh, whatever, you know? And then you would feel like, am I weird or broken? What is wrong with me that I keep? And then you meet other comedians finally and you go, oh, this is a whole personality type. I'm not, home. This is a thing that a certain type of person does. And I'm not weird. Well, I'm weird, but at least other people do it.
And now we take a quick pause to thank the sponsor for the ID10T episode. It's Squarespace, now featuring email campaigns. Yes, you know with Squarespace, you can create websites, you can build online stores, you can use their marketing tools, you can create a blog that you want, you can park domains, but now email campaigns to promote those things. You'll sell more, you'll stand out in any inbox with Squarespace email campaigns. It's an all-in-one platform that makes it easy to unify everything in your voice from homepage to emails. It's consistent content all the way through powerful editing tools to make it your own. And then customizable layouts for any message. Mobile editing, you can send anytime, anywhere, thanks to Squarespace. And then, of course, beyond all that, yes, you can turn your idea into a website, you can showcase your work. You can publish any kind of content you want with beautiful templates created by world-class designers, powerful e-commerce that has functionality to let you sell anything online. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. So go to squarespace.com/ID10T for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use the offer code ID10T to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Thank you to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the ID10T podcast, which we now glide seamlessly back into.
I guess the hardest thing is I really feel for the comics out there who that's what I've been thinking a lot about is they must be trembling in their boots, you know, because they're not working and they depend on that work. We're lucky enough to have had other work that we're not depending on that necessarily. And I think about that all the time. I think of what's going to happen and maybe we should do some kind of thing where, you know, I can never organize anything, so I'm just counting on you.
Well, it is the comics who rely on performing in the clubs, but it's also trying to figure out a way to help keep the clubs open too, because there are a lot of clubs that really kind of go month to month. You know, it really supports a whole ecosystem of people that I hope are okay. I really hope that
these clubs
can survive because they employ so many people.
Here's what we'll do. If you want to do it, we'll put pressure on ourselves. Or I'll put pressure on you and you put pressure on me. We'll do this thing where we switch roles and maybe, and then we'll go on like a Zoom performance and we'll do it back and forth with each other because I think we are a good audience for each other.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? And we can play it out and see, and maybe we'll put it up on all the club things and have people send money. And, you know, see if they want to see it. You know, I don't know.
I know that a lot of people I know a lot of people have done Zoom shows. My friend Jack Acacian has been doing some shows for Acme. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. But now that clubs are starting to open back up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think.
All right. People, well, you're off the hook then.
No, it's a great idea, though.
Well, we should still try and do it.
Yeah, I know that Birbiglia was doing that right when the virus first hit.
Huh?
Mike Birbiglia, yeah,
best
it's a great name.
Names in the whole world.
It's a good
he's
name.
On, just... He's on Billions. He was on Billions last season.
I didn't know that. We haven't. That's a show we haven't seen.
Oh, you're going to love Billions.
So much time to watch shows like Baskets, for instance.
You're so sweet.
Or like your comedy special.
Oh, it's on the 28th, 23rd.
It's on the 23rd.
CW. On the CW.
I didn't even know the CW was doing
Where
comedy
are they?
Specials.
Hold on a second. Let me see if I can get to them. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. I'm very close.
Do you have the big underwear close. Right there?
I'm very close. Hold on. I just folded. I wash my own clothes. I like the smell of laundry.
it's very meditative.
And these are one day I was folding my clothes. It's good, isn't it? These are my favorite. Actually.
This should be the wait. Hold that up again. This should be the freeze frame for the. If you peek your head out, your eyes out the top. This is the.
I was folding my clothes one day, and I go, Jesus, whose are these? And it made me laugh so hard. That I just said, they said, what do you want? I go, I had this really, like, nobody wanted me to call the show Big Underwear. And I said, why not? I go, so I said, you know, people are going to be going through the programs on the TV, and they're going to see Shark Tank and Deadliest Catch, right? Right? And what are they going to see then? Louis Anderson, hey, likes butter?
Right.
Louis Anderson butter? Do you think that's? But if they see Louis Anderson Big Underwear, I got a shot of them tuning in on that.
I got to see this Big Underwear thing. What constitutes Big Underwear?
How big are they?
Do I have Big Underwear?
Do I have Big Underwear? But anyways, I don't know. I
didn't know the CW was doing comedy specials. That's fantastic.
No, neither did I.
Did they approach you?
I can't really get into the details of the...
Okay.
No, I think Comedy Dynamics. You know those people.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm practicing my Chris already. Yeah, and then I was, I'm over here and I'm going down this ramp. First of all, who made the first fucking ramp? Who was it? Who was the guy? Did he see a hill where there was a snow? The snow was an automatic ramp. He went, why can't I make a fucking concrete ramp? Why can't I?
Dropping in the F-bombs is so perfect. It is so perfect. I don't know if I have a Louis. I just, in my head, a lot of times I hear, Chip!
Chip! Chip!
Well, there's your ringtone.
It's Hardwick! Shut up!
That's your ringtone now. When you call me, it's going to be you saying Chip.
Chip. Oh, here's a better one for you. Chris. 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 Lydia, is Chris around? For God's sakes. There you go.
God damn it. That's going to have me laughing in it.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by now doing that 5 to 7 minutes of.
I love it because I haven't written anything really much during quarantine because I think a lot of the creative energy has been devoted to like, are we allowed to go outside? Like, what do we do? Do we have enough, you know, food? Do we have enough toilet paper? You know, that stuff. But then also I just work better when I know I have a show on the books. And when I have a show, like in a month, I just focus. But when my shows are 6 months away, it's very hard for me. You know, I was a guy that did his homework the night before it was due. That's just how I work. Do you work that way? Or are you able to just write?
I have to work at writing. Every comic has to work at writing, but once you make up your mind, like you do yours, you make up your mind, you're going to write it. Like I already know I don't. The only thing I don't know is I'm not really as smart as you.
Yeah, it's not true.
No. I mean, in the way of like you're well read, and you know what all this stuff means. So I got to really work at making sure I have a couple of good turns in the bit that where you go, that's all I want. Oh God, they got me on that, didn't they?
It's so funny. I love that you want to do this. I love that you want to do this.
I guess I'll tell you why. This, you only live once, hopefully. And I mean, if you could live again, I guess Shirley MacLaine has lived several times, a lot of lives. But listen, you're my friend. I can do this. I've been working with you. You did stand up at my show at the Improv in 1901.
It was 1901, yeah. It was
1901.
I remember when it was. It was 1996. Yeah,
1996, and you were nervous,
terrified, and I had one good show and one horrible bomb show.
Yeah, that's and, how life is, right there.
And I say this
was
every
that a
time.
Friday night.
It was a Friday and Saturday. Friday was the good show. Saturday was the bad show that I invited.
Saturday, you know why? Because you invited your friends, and it's such a conservative crowd on Saturdays for me. That's my conservative night.
Oh, is it really? I don't know.
Even I can't do certain things.
You know what? It wasn't because I don't think I was doing any.
To give you a way out here.
I know. But it was just the reason that I love to tell the story every time you're on is because it's such good advice. That I think not just applies to stand up, but applies to anything else, which is I got off stage and I was destroyed. Like I just felt I was so torn up that I didn't perform again for another year. And oh my you said God. To me,
I'm mad at you for that.
I go, I'm so sorry. And you go, no. Get on stage 100 times, then see where you're at. You don't know who you are on stage until you've done it 100 times. And I had only done it really a handful of times at that point. So I just didn't have the experience to understand, like, the first joke didn't fly and I immediately shut down and it informed the energy for the rest of the set. And the audience saw me upset and sweating. And so they felt bad. And when they feel pity, then they can't, then it's not. So I've always given that advice to people who want to be comedians. Get on stage 100 times regardless and then you'll know. Sure. And
with anything.
Just
you gotta
doing
do
it.
Minimum of 100 times.
Just have to know. You just have to. Right. You don't know who you are till you go down the path, get some experience, and you just get the perspective, and you learn things that you couldn't even have conceived of because you just don't understand the process until you do it a bunch.
I got to get that whole mannerism stuff you got. So you don't.
I'm half Italian. My mom's Italian, so I'm very. Yeah, I talk with my hands.
And the pasta, and the pizza, and the boots.
And then I have to learn how to stand still and do the. Yeah. You know, like you just kind of tilt your head from side to side.
What is that? Louie.
And this one hand goes on the chest.
Hey everybody, welcome to my party. what a wonderful time I had on I don't know how long you do these for.
This is about an hour.
Yeah. You know, all my best junior family and all the people out there listening that are struggling, you're not alone struggling. We're all struggling. I don't care what your position is. This is struggle time. And take a deep breath, get alone with yourself and take a deep breath and just go, everything's going to work out. Everything's going to work out. It will. And, you know, you just have to believe in that because if you don't get into that frame of mind, you won't be able to see when it clears up and where you can go and what you can do. You got to be at peace yourself and move towards that stuff you've always wanted to do. Everything you've always wanted to do, this is the time to do it. Don't be afraid. Be fearless. And know that you're not alone. A lot of people out there are in the same boat. And it's not sinking. It's sailing along.
Oh, I love you. I just genuinely love you. I really missed seeing you. And I'm so glad we got to do this. And, you know, just thank you for everything. And I'm legitimately I will watch your special when it airs on the CW.
Big Underwear special will be Tuesday, June 23rd, 9 o'clock Eastern. Louis Anderson, Big Underwear, CW. Catch it. You'll love it.
I'm going to set the record, and I'm going to watch it, and I'm just so excited to see you do a bunch of new stuff.
I'm going to tell you something about that special.
What?
I really struggled the first show in it. I was nervous. I was shooting baskets at the time, and I was struggling, and all my friends were out there, and I was down at the LA Theater downtown, and I was dying on stage in my mind on the first show. And then the second show, I took a deep breath and said, what does any of that worry matter? You know, all the worry in the world can't make you live 1 second longer. So, and then I really let it go, and it was a much better special.
Oh my God, that's such a great piece of advice. All the worry in the world can't make you live 1 second longer.
It can, and it can't change anything, the worry.
The worry is...
Because the worry is all just like a placeholder for the actual thing you are afraid of, because there's nothing to be afraid of. It's not happening yet.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, the oldest bits of advice I got from a therapist once was worry is a misuse of your imagination, which I love.
That's good. That's
and number
good
two, I
that
know
must
have
been that... At least $150 an hour.
That person. I'm sure it was. And I also know that there is an overactive, like, preparation thing that anxious people have of, like, I have to worry, you know, I worry about this in case it happens. It's like, well, if it happens, you still have to deal with it. Now you're having to deal with it twice. But then it becomes a part of people's ritual because they go, well, I have to worry about this thing so that everything's okay. And it's like, well, no, you don't, because that's not really how the universe works. So wouldn't it be great if you could just let that go and not waste the present worrying about the future?
It's true. And here's what a good friend Jonathan was. He came back and said hi, I think, or we talked afterwards. And I go, oh, I'm so sorry. I was so out of it that set. He goes, you were great.
And that was it.
He goes, you were good. You were funny. I never seen you before. You're so funny. And he just, that was it. He said, you were great. You're crazy if you think that wasn't good. And so that's what we do to ourselves because we're perfectionists. But we need those Jonathans. We need you to say what you said and me to say what I say. Because we're worrying, we're perfection is something you might like to shoot for or aim for. But just be real, because that's the only good stuff you got. All the
perfection
other stuff
is a fake
bogus
idea.
Yeah, it's a
perfection
fake.
Perfection is fake.
I got to get that in there. I'm going to have that in your set.
Okay.
I'm going to have that yours. And yeah, you know that perfection is a fake ideal. The ideal situation is not to have perfection. Sit on your laurels, wherever they are.
What's a laurel? Why are we sitting
Hardy
on them?
It's half of Hardy and Laurel. No.
You don't want to go full Laurel. You really, because a full Laurel is a half a Hardy.
Yeah. Listen, if you could get a half a Hardy and a half a Laurel, you'd have the perfect Laurel and Hardy or Hardy and Laurel.
I mean, I just, you know, the other thing too, the whole other level of stuff that you start to discover if you are someone who obsesses over details, or you might be a perfectionist, or you're anxious, or you worry about stuff, is outside of the ritual of worry. One thing that people might start to learn is like, oh, do I bring myself back to this stressful place because something inside me feels like I deserve to feel bad, or I deserve to suffer, or I, you know, like for people who spend their whole lives beating themselves up, you know, maybe they were bullied as a kid. And so it just ingrained in their head, like, oh, I deserve, you know, like maybe I should feel bad. And you don't need to. And can you free yourself from that? Is it something you're doing to yourself?
Yeah.
Can you free yourself from
that? Let's not let this opportunity that what you just said go by without commenting on it for both of us. You can't do that to yourself. because you've got to look at it as you're going to back yourself up. Don't let yourself do that. Don't let yourself or your biggest fear, whatever your biggest fear is, climb into bed with it and let it, you know, realize how really harmless it is. So what if this happens? 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 You're never going to see the thing that hits you before it hits you anyways.
Right.
Just let it hit you. Let it go through you. Let it feel the fear, voice the fear, embrace the fear, and then kick it out of bed. And then say, I got to get going. I don't care if you go do dishes, you go wash your clothes, you know, like that's a humbling thing to wash my clothes. I said, I should send all that stuff out and get it washed. And I said to myself out loud, well, they don't do it right. They don't do it the way I want it.
So I'm going to do it myself. Yeah.
The real truth is I need that. I needed to wash and fold those clothes.
Yeah.
I just needed to. And it bring me back to that terrible dryer we had growing up. You know, we'd hear the tennis shoe clunk, 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 or your little brother clunk, clunk, clunk. But that when my mom would pull those towels out of the dryer and smell them, she goes, "Do you ever smell anything so beautiful, Louie?" I go, "I guess not."
And that's the stuff that sticks with you.
And that's the stuff that sticks with you. You know, depend on the stuff that sticks with you. You know, and all the stuff that's beating you up, you know, you don't need it.
No.
Take it from somebody. I would have been 10 times more successful had I not given in to that fear.
But I don't know, I mean, maybe when you say 10 times more successful.
I just say, you know, I'm always shooting over the number, but.
I think I would have been
much happier, actually, had I not let the fear drive me to all the things that it drove me to and the hardships it caused me.
But because I see you as incredibly successful because, again, you have done all these amazing things. And you have real balance now. And maybe, you know, maybe that's part of the success and not whatever in your mind, like some mathematical calculation of like financial success. I mean, I don't, whatever you're thinking of is like that other, oh, I could have been 10 times more successful. I see you as incredibly successful because you've learned, you've grown, you've evolved, you've gotten past all the stuff that you were hard on yourself about, and you're in a good place and you still get to do the things that you love to do. And I don't know what could be more successful than that. You know what I mean? And you make people happy. So,
all right. Well, 5 times then.
I
no, I appreciate that. And you're exactly right. I am exactly in a place where I should be. And I should be so happy and content. But that is something to remember, that even if you have done a lot of things, you have to constantly be reminded by people who care about you that you've done a good job. And leave it at that and not try to say, but what about, you don't need to.
No, and this is just for anyone who is extra hard on themselves. This whole like last 10, 15 minutes is for anyone who's hard on themselves, for anyone who feels crippled with worry. Yes, there are some things to worry about, but is there any part of that that you can reexamine and let go? Because letting go of any of it will net out better for you. So what can you jettison right now and know you don't need to beat yourself up and know you don't deserve to be unhappy and know you don't, you know, it's just all those things that we get stuck in our heads.
I'm going to go back to what your therapist says. Worry robs you of your creativity. Is that what it was?
Worry is a misuse of your imagination. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, misuse. I see how I made it mine.
But that's a great spin on it, though.
Yeah, but I mean, seriously, work harder, worry less, because even if the work isn't perfect, it's work, and the work that you create and the content that you mine is here forever, man.
Yeah,
you get to have it. You get to have it here. You do the things that you want to do, and someday somebody will stumble upon what you have done, and your intent will be realized.
Oh, that is so wonderful. That's so sweet. I wish I could give you a hug. I just wish I could give you a big hug right now.
You did.
Oh, good.
Just saying that. But, all right.
Are you okay?
Yeah. This is the most alive people are. If you aren't brought to tears every day, you're just not living.
Right.
But I had a wonderful time. And I'm going to start doing my Hardwick 7.
I'm going to start. Oh, God. Do I get to use any of it? Boy.
You can use anything you want.
then you can use it.
There's no rules on this, first of all.
Okay.
We're not looking for perfection. We're looking for the process and the act. I always tell people, you know, this whole thing that we're doing, the outcome is hardly ever meets the journey. The right. outcome, the outcome, the outcome or outcome, the outcome, outcome the outcome is hardly ever as wonderful and most and interesting as the journey. Because in the journey, you are fully, fully alive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you look at it like a cross-country trip, I'm driving from here, I'm driving from the East Coast, and I want to get to the West Coast. Eventually, you'll get to the West Coast. Exactly. But if you really stop and pay attention and see all the amazing things along the way, that's the part where you grow, not arriving on the West Coast. That moment doesn't make you grow. Yeah. It's like, all of the stuff that you see and experience along the way.
That's exactly right. Like, just driving to all my, like somebody said, my husband is going to pick up my daughter and her fiance's clothes and household belongings because they're moving back to where we are in Denver. And I said, and he's taking the kids. And I said, what a great experience that he is going to have for Father's Day, because he's leaving, because he's going back there and the kids are with him and they are going to have the most fun time in the world. Yes, it'll be hard, it'll be difficult, could be scary, but what a wonderful opportunity for all of them. And it'll be that journey they'll have forever. He wouldn't have those. I know exactly why he agreed to do it. One, because he cares about his daughter and her fiance, but two, because, oh yeah, this is life, because he's smart enough to know that this is what life is about.
That's a perfect place to end. I miss you, and
I miss you too.
I really hope to get to see you soon and give you a hug in person.
Likewise, hugs to Sharon and Lydia.
I will.
And I'll talk to you. Thanks for having me, and I'll, you know, we'll just in 30 days we'll check in with each other.
Okay.
And see where we're at. How about that?
Perfect. We're recording this June 15th, so July 15th we'll check in.
And when will it be on?
This is going up the day your special airs.
Beautiful.
So
glad we got that right then.
Yeah. 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 So Tuesday the 23rd.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Does anybody call you Christopher?
My mom does.
Oh, good. All right. I love you.
You can call me that. You can call me that. Your family.
All right. Thanks so much. Likewise.
Okay.
You can call me Lewis.
Lewis.
Lewis. Okay. All right. Love you.
Good night. Bye. You too. Bye.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.